One also for John Owen, who soon takes over from Graham as the new pastor and CEO of the Wayside Chapel. Both men are with me here in Life Matters. Graham, 14 years, that's a fair innings to be doing a tough job. Why does now feel like the right time to finish up as head of the Wayside Chapel?
You're lucky you're not looking at me. I'm a physical wreck.
Is that from the job?
No, I'm just joking with you. 14 years is actually a fairly long run at a place like Wayside. And in the Uniting Church, we have to give a commitment sort of 5 years ahead all the time, five-year terms. And in 5 years from now, I'll be 72 or something. And I'm already hard of hearing. An Aboriginal lady asked me yesterday, "Why are you going? You're still young." I said, "Honey, I can't hear things very well." She said, "Yes, you can." I said, "Sorry, what'd you say?" So look, I just think it's time. I think if I can achieve a generational change in leadership, it will be the best thing I've done for the Wayside.
Well, Graham, how did you get the job in the first place? Now, you'd been a social worker, but I think you were working as a postman at the time.
I was. I wasn't even a very good postman, really. You would wonder how you can muck that job up. You basically get a letter and stick it in a letterbox, and technically you've mastered the job, but I was never one for detail, and I quite often would just start a street and find at the end I had letters left over. And you know, one day a man stopped me and he said, "Posty, I'm cranky with you." He said, "Yesterday you delivered all my mail to the people next door, and I got the man from the mail from the other side." And he had a boy standing just behind him who looked like he'd never given cheek to his father. And I said, "Yeah, I know." I said, "Australia Post is running a Meet Your Neighbour campaign this week."
Well,
I thought I was hilarious.
I suspect you've been a better pastor running the Wayside Chapel than you were a postman. John
Correct.
Owen, you've been the assistant pastor at Wayside Chapel for the past 18 months, but what was your background before that?
I was a social worker as well, working in community work with a organisation called Urban Neighbours of Hope.
And that was a sort of religious order, serving and living, where you were serving and living among people in need?
Yes, absolutely. It's a small organisation that takes on lifestyle commitments of poverty, service and obedience, and seeks to work within the communities that we're trying to impact.
And your background, your cultural background, is Sri Lankan Indian?
Absolutely, yeah. Born in Malaysia, grandfather's Sri Lankan, and three other grandparents are Indian.
Well, Graham, the Wayside Chapel started back in 1964. It's a very well-known place. But by the time you came on board in 2004, what sort of shape was it in?
Oh, we had serious discussions about whether we had a future, actually. It was kind of depressing. The building had gone into a state of disrepair. The good thing was we had a great reputation. Everybody knew us. But I did weddings standing in an inch of water on some days, and 40% of our building had been condemned. So, you know, the things that we were doing were good and they were thriving and even growing, but the building we were doing them in was shrinking. And replacing a building is a very serious problem to have. So it was a case of jump into replace the building or go away was what we were looking at back in 2004.
Well, you were certainly credited with turning things around there. John, the mission for Graham as your predecessor in a way was pretty clear, you know, to resurrect and reinvigorate what was then a struggling organisation. I mean, I'm not saying that would have been easy, but the mission at least was clear. For you now taking over the reins when it is in much better shape, what's your mission?
Certainly when Graham turned up on his first day, the mission was clear to save the place from closing its doors. And I get this wonderful opportunity to continue to communicate not only to the public but also to everyone who's in our neighbourhood and community, that the work of the wayside rolls on, and wherever there are people that need love and care and compassion, we'll be there.
Well, Graham, the Wayside Chapel talks about there being no us and them, which I guess speaks to a common humanity. But also I think that there's a kind of fine line between leading a functioning life and not. I mean, from what you see through your work, how do you explain the sort of switch in circumstances where someone can have a home, a family, an income one day and have barely nothing the next?
People do underestimate how easy it is to fall into homelessness. The truth is you only need a few things to go wrong in succession and not have family money or backup tucked away somewhere. And you can go from regular job housed into homelessness within a matter of weeks or months. So people, I guess there's a bit of an illusion. People look at homeless people and think that's a different race of people. But the truth is when you get to know them, there's always a story and nobody set out to be homeless. And the truth is, under the right circumstances, it can happen. It can happen to anybody much.
You're listening to Life Matters with Amanda Smith, where I'm joined by Reverend Graham Long AM, the outgoing and, well, outgoing in both senses of the word, actually, pastor and CEO of the Wayside Chapel in Sydney's King's Cross, now also operating out of Bondi, and Pastor John Owen, who takes over in July from Graham Long. John, Wayside Chapel's catchphrase is love over hate. What's the key for you to putting that philosophy into practice when, you know, when the people you're working with might be hateful, might be angry or violent or difficult or act in unlovable ways?
Well, I'll have to lean on the book The Brothers Karamazov, where there's a wonderful quote that says, love in my dreams is such a marvellous and glorious thing, but love in reality is, you know, active labour and fortitude. And love certainly isn't a feeling, you know, it's a verb, it's a decision and it's an action that we take. And I think we've, you know, by and large begun to confuse loving with liking. You know, as long as things make me feel good, I'll continue to pass my consent to them. But the decision to love is one where you make a decision not to give up on a person, to work with them and to journey with them, as in the same way people have walked with myself and journeyed with me and not given up. And so it's a daily decision, but it's one that's a joy to make.
And John, you've also worked alongside very marginalised people across multiple communities in the past, asylum seekers and refugees, people in recovery, ex-prisoners, I think. What for you is the sort of key to building relationships and a sense of trust with socially isolated people?
Well, you were right to pick up that I'm Malaysian and Indian. It usually comes through in my thick accent. And one of the joys of growing up in a big extended immigrant coloured family is that you never know who and who isn't your family. At some point, anyone who's growing up black in Australia will ask their parents this question of, are they my uncle or my uncle? And, you know, every parent will look at you with a confused expression on their face and always give you the answer, everybody is your family. And I think that is one of the most healthiest ways to approach life and building relationships with community, is not to say, here's a problem to be solved or here's someone who I need to cross a road really and stretch myself to meet, but to say, you know, who have I not yet met from my family and how can I build a relationship with them? And so that's very much the things my family taught me that we carry on to today, to building love and relationships and trust. And so every day is a joy. I get to meet family that I've never met before.
Well, Graham, that's a philosophy that you've operated with too, I think, with the people who come to the Wayside Chapel for a cuppa, for a meal, for help. You also, I think, you've spoken about this in the past, not to regard these people as a problem to fix, but as a person to be met. Now, how have you come to that understanding of them and of yourself?
Well, I think that we live in a culture that really does construct people as lonely I mean, we're born, we're hardwired as social beings. That's just the way it is. But over time, you know, we go through the school system and whatever else, and most people who walk into Wayside walk in believing they're the only ones in the world who've ever been through what they've gone through. And we say to one another, if somebody can walk away from Wayside feeling met rather than worked on, then it's a good day. The trouble is with the culture we live in, we constantly relate to one another as if we were problems to be solved, not persons to be met. And you know, while you're working on a problem, you'll never meet the person, you know, who's right in front of you. So, and if you do meet the person, usually they will realise that others are with them and for them, and they'll move towards health and they'll solve their own problems under their own steam.
I wonder, though, how both of you maintain your sense of faith and hope when you are faced daily with people and stories and evidence of inequality, really, Graham?
Meeting people, when a meeting takes place, the good news is always two ways. So it's not like I need some kind of storage tank full of resilience so that I can keep on batting on in this very difficult circumstance. That's not how it works. How it works is when I meet another human being, they change and I change. And so I leave Wayside most days feeling more alive than when I got there.
What about for you, John, maintaining faith and hope when you're on the front line witnessing suffering?
Well, yeah, exactly what Graham said. Life flows both ways. So I learnt this lesson early on as a young social worker, and I was running a youth club with the children who were seeking asylum in Australia from East Timor. And we got to the end of our youth night and, you know, it's a time when the youth leader would get serious and deliver some deep wisdom to the group while they're full of sugar and yell at them for trying to sit still and not being able to. And this one young girl who was 12 years old, who's younger than my youngest now, just looked at me and said, "John, you know, what we'd really like for you to do is just to pray that I'm not deported, because I'm not ready to die yet." And this is at a time where the military was still occupying East Timor, and deportation at the time would have meant certain death. And that was a real light bulb moment for me, because this no longer was me being a good person. This no longer was me helping somebody, helping a poor person. But this was me doing life with a sister. And, you know, someone once remarked, we won't make poverty history until we make poverty personal. And why I answer it that way is that over the campaign to advocate for this community to get them permanent residence, it was a 10-12 year campaign, and so many good people burnt out on the way. But the ones of us who stuck in for the long haul were the ones who had flesh and blood relationships with these brothers and sisters. And so whenever we were tempted to maybe go onto the brink of burnout, we'd always pull ourselves back, because we said we cannot be the ones that give up on our brothers and sisters. And, you know, I'm happy to report that young 12-year-old girl now is a woman who's pushing 30 with a ute and two kids and has a beautiful life. And, you know, there's stories like that. You know, the life flows both ways, and she's a sister of mine, and I'm her brother.
Well, what I also get a sense from both of you during the course of this conversation with is, alongside the seriousness of your commitment, Graham, is a sense of humour being essential, I think, to the role.
Yeah, look, it doesn't help. You know, you don't have to be crazy to work in this place, but it does help a fair bit. So I think if you lose the capacity to laugh at yourself, you know, you've really lost something. And I think one of our ideals at Wayside is we try to remind one another that it's not all about us, that the mission is what matters. Our mission is to create community with no us and them. And so because it's not all about me, then how I feel about that is not the central issue. And it's not my task to go around telling people how I feel about it. It's my task to let the mission be central. And so I can stand back, which gives me the freedom to admit mistakes and even embrace mistakes and learn. And it also gives me the freedom to laugh at myself. And from time to time, I'm a very funny man, even though my daughter constantly tells
yes,
me
well,
it's not true.
That'd be dad jokes. Graham, look, I wish you all the very best. And John, all the best to you too, taking over the role. Reverend Graham Long AM has been running the Wayside Chapel in King's Cross in Sydney for the past 14 years. And in July, he hands over that role to Pastor John Owen. This is Life Matters, and hello, Matthew Crawford.
Yes, Belinda Smith gave us a great rundown of what we need to know about the carbon offset we're sometimes offered when we're booking air travel. And we'll put up a link to Bell's full article on the Life Matters page on the RN website.
Great.
And she was telling us we can cut carbon emissions by, well, flying less. That's one thing we can all do. Or by packing lightly, which prompted someone to ask, when will they start weighing passengers?
No, that's
a worrying tale for all of us.